Once upon a time, there was a king who had three sons. And when his three sons had grown to manhood, the king gave each of them a golden arrow and told them to go to the topmost tower of his palace and shoot the arrows as far as they could. And wherever the arrows landed, there they should seek their bride. And so the first son, he took his golden arrow, and he climbed to the top of the topmost tower of his father's palace, and with all his strength and all his skill, he shot his golden arrow into the sky with such speed that in the twinkling of an eye, it was just a tiny golden speck disappearing into the blue sky. And when his golden arrow finally came to ground, it landed in the garden of another king. The king's daughter, the princess, she picked it up, and when she took it in to show her father, he said that she should guard it with her life and only give it to the man that asked her to marry him. And so when the first son came riding up to the king's palace and asked for his arrow back, the daughter was summoned. And when she saw the handsome prince standing there, she said, "I will only give this arrow to the man that asks me to marry him." "Well, fine," said the first son. "That was what he'd come for. Would she marry him?" "Why, yes, of course she would, because she could see as well as anybody else that he was not just young and handsome, but he was a prince as well." The king gave his blessing to the engagement, and the first son rode home with his heart singing like a bird. Well, the second son, he had taken his golden arrow and gone up to the topmost tower of his father's palace. And he had shot his golden arrow with such speed and such skill that in the twinkling of an eye, the golden arrow was just a tiny golden speck receding into the distance. And when his golden arrow came to ground, it landed in the garden of a duke. The duke's daughter, she was out in the garden, and when she picked up the arrow and took it in to show her father, he said she should guard it with her life and only give it to the man that asked her to marry him. And so when the second son came riding up to the duke's mansion and asked for his arrow back, the daughter was summoned. And as soon as she set eyes on that handsome prince standing there, she said, "I will only give this arrow to the man that asks me to marry him." "Well, fine," said the second son. "That was just what he'd come for. Would she marry him?" "Why, yes, of course she would, because she could see as well as anybody else that here was a man who was not just young and fine and handsome, but he was a prince as well." The duke very happily gave his blessing to the engagement, and the second son went home feeling like the luckiest man on earth. Well, the third son's name was Ivan Tsarevich. And Ivan, he was not quite so tall and so strong, and he certainly wasn't quite so handsome as his two elder brothers. But nonetheless, he too was the son of the king, and he too had been given a golden arrow. And he too had gone to the topmost turret of his father's palace and shot the arrow with all the strength and all the skill that he could muster. But his arrow, it did not disappear into the distant blue sky. Rather, it drifted on the wind. It wavered, trembled, and then fell to earth, no farther than the great green forest that grew just beyond the walls of his father's town, where it landed in the middle of a swamp. And Ivan climbed down from the topmost tower and he walked through the streets of his father's town until he came to the forest. And the deeper he walked into the great green forest, the wetter the ground became beneath his feet, until he saw ahead of him the murky stillness of the swamp. And as Ivan came to the edge of a pool, he saw something glinting in the middle of it. And as he looked closer, he saw his golden arrow lying on a lily pad. And sitting on top of his golden arrow, there was a little green frog. And Ivan said, "Can I have my arrow back, please?" And the little green frog, she looked up at Ivan, and she blinked, and she said, "I will only give this arrow to the man that asks me to marry him." Ivan, he shook his head, and he said, "I'm sorry, what did you say?" And the little green frog, she looked up at Ivan, and she blinked, and she said, "I will only give this arrow to the man that asks me to marry him." And Ivan's jaw dropped open. He said, "How can I marry you? You're a frog. I'm a man. Men don't marry frogs. Look, give me my arrow back." But as Ivan plunged into the pond to retrieve his arrow, the frog picked it up in its mouth and dived beneath the water. And soaking wet, Ivan had to trudge home empty-handed. Well, at the end of the week, the king summoned his three sons to him to hear what had happened with their golden arrows. And the first son, he was only too bursting to tell his father everything that had happened with his golden arrow and how it had landed in the garden of a king and how the king's daughter wanted to marry him. And, "Oh, father, she was so beautiful and she was so talented and wonderful." And, oh, in the end, the king had to tell him to stop and calm down. And, yes, indeed, it sounded wonderful and he was very glad that he'd made such a good match. And then he turned to the second son. And the second son was only too eager to impress upon his father that, well, although he hadn't seen this princess, he was quite sure there couldn't possibly be a woman more wonderful, more beautiful, more talented than the woman, the duke's daughter, that he was going to marry. And the king, he couldn't help smiling at his two sons, but he was pleased nonetheless. But when he turned to Ivan, he found his third son standing there silent, unable to meet his gaze. "Well, Ivan," said the king. "Father," said Ivan, "my golden arrow landed in a swamp. A frog picked it up, father."
"A frog?" said the king. "Did you say a frog?"
"Yes, father. A little green, slimy frog. I don't have to marry a frog, do I, father?" And the king, He looked long and hard at Ivan. He said, "Ivan, you know the tradition. Wherever the golden arrow lands, there you must seek your bride. And if it is a frog that has picked up your arrow, then I'm afraid you must marry the frog." And that was that. At the end of the week, there was a grand triple wedding. Thousands of people came from all over the kingdom. The cathedral was packed. And there at the altar stood the first son, with the princess by his side. There was the second son, with the duke's daughter by his side. And there was Ivan, with the little green frog on a silver dish. Well, when the wedding was over, the three sons left their father's palace and set up homes of their own. The first son, he moved into a large mansion not far from his father's palace. The second son, he too moved into a large mansion not far from his father's palace. But Ivan was so ashamed of his little green frog that he had a little cottage built on the edge of the green forest. And every day he would sit at his kitchen table and he would look at the little green frog sitting in the middle of it. And he would say to himself, "What sort of a life is this?" Well, a few days passed, and then the king sent word to his three sons that he would like to see how well his daughters-in-law could sew. Each of his daughters-in-law should sew him a shirt, and not just any old shirt, but a shirt finer than any he had in his wardrobe. And when Ivan heard this, he wandered home forlornly. He sat down at his kitchen table, and he stared at the little green frog sitting in the middle of it, and he sighed. And the little green frog, she looked up at Ivan, and she blinked, and she said, "Ivan, you're weeping. What's wrong?" Ivan, he said, "What's wrong? What's wrong? My father has said that you must make him a shirt finer than any he has in his wardrobe. How are you supposed to make a shirt? You're a frog. Frogs don't make shirts." And the little green frog, she looked up at Ivan, and she blinked, and she said, "Ivan, you're tired. Go to sleep. The morning is wiser than the evening. Your shirt shall be made." And Ivan, he realized he was rather tired, and he picked himself up, and he carried himself off to bed, and he laid himself down. And when he was quite soundly asleep, the little green frog, she hopped across the kitchen table. She checked one window to be sure that no one was looking. She checked the other window to be sure that no one was looking. And when she was quite sure that no one was there, she hopped off the kitchen table onto the kitchen floor, and there she peeled off her frog skin. And when that skin lay on the floor, beside it there stood a princess so lovely that the whole kitchen was lit up with her loveliness. She went to the door of the cottage, and she stood outside, and she called, and she whistled, and she shouted, and she stamped. And from all over the forest her servants came running, and they said, "Mistress, mistress, what do you require of us?" And she said, "I want a shirt. I want a shirt finer than any the king has in his wardrobe. Go, it must be ready by sunrise." And all the servants hurried off into the forest, and some gathered wool and some gathered flax, some gathered silk and some gathered dyes, some searched high and low for precious gems, and all night long they span and wove and cut and sewed and dyed and decorated, until by morning they handed the frog princess the most magnificent shirt you've ever seen, beautifully cut, perfectly stitched, brightly patterned, and studded with precious gems. And the frog princess, she took this magnificent shirt and she laid it down by the side of Ivan's bed. And then she went back to where her little green frog skin lay. And no sooner had she bent down and touched it than in that instant the beautiful princess was no more to be seen, and the only living thing in the kitchen was a little green frog sitting on the kitchen floor. Well, the next morning the king summoned his three sons to him to examine the shirts their wives had made. But the first son's wife, she was a princess, and so in all her life she'd never been taught how to sew. And so the shirt that she'd made was a dreadful sight, a misshapen mess of miscut pieces of cloth, all sewn together with stitching so tangled it gave you a headache just looking at it. And the king, he took this shirt in his hands, and he looked at it. And the longer he looked, the more disgusted he became, until he gave a great cry of disgust, and he threw the shirt to the ground. And then he turned to his second son. But the second son, his wife was a duke's daughter, and so she'd spent a good deal more time learning how to speak French and learning how to play the piano than she had learning how to sew shirts. But she at least knew the basics. And so the shirt that the second son handed to the king was at least properly cut and at least properly sewn. But that was about all you could say for it, for it was nothing more than a plain white shirt. And the king took it, and he looked at it, and the longer he looked, the more unimpressed he became, until he gave a harumph, and he laid it on the side of his throne. But when he turned to Ivan, the two elder brothers, they looked at each other as if to say, well, our shirts may not have been much to shout about, but Ivan won't even have a shirt, because as everybody knows, little green frogs don't make shirts. And so when Ivan drew out that magnificent shirt that was beautifully cut, perfectly sewn, brightly patterned, and studded with precious gems, the king took it in both hands, and he marvelled at it. And the longer he looked, the larger the smile on his face became, until he declared with a beaming face that this shirt was finer not merely than every shirt in his wardrobe, but it was finer than any shirt he'd ever seen. And the two brothers looked at each other as if to say, how does a little frog make a shirt like that? But Ivan couldn't tell them, and that was that. Well, a few days passed, and then the king sent word to his three sons that he would like to see how well his daughters-in-law could bake. Each of his daughters-in-law should make him a loaf of bread, and not just any loaf of bread, but a loaf finer than any he'd ever tasted in his life. And when Ivan heard this, he wandered home to his little cottage on the edge of the forest. He sat down at his kitchen table, and he looked at the little green frog sitting in the middle of it. And he sighed. And the little green frog, she looked up at Ivan, and she blinked. And she said, Ivan, you're weeping? What's wrong? Ivan, he said, what's wrong? What's wrong? My father has said that you must make him a loaf of bread. A loaf of bread finer than he's ever tasted in his life. How are you supposed to make bread? You're a frog. Frogs don't make bread. And the little green frog, she looked up at Ivan, and she blinked, and she said, Ivan, you're tired. Go to sleep. The morning is wiser than the evening. Your bread shall be made. And Ivan, he realized he was rather tired, and so he picked himself up, and he carried himself off to bed, and he laid himself down. And when he was quite soundly asleep, the little green frog, she hopped across the kitchen table. She checked one window to be sure that no one was looking. She checked the other window to be sure that no one was looking. And then she saw, pressing their two little faces up against the window, were the two other daughters-in-law. For as soon as they'd heard the king's request, they'd gone straight round to Ivan's house to see and copy how his wife might make bread. And when the little green frog saw this, she did not take off her frog skin. Rather, she hopped up onto the kitchen counter, and there she filled a bowl full of water. She threw some flour into the water, and then jumping up onto the rim of the bowl, she jumped into the mixture and started wriggling around, flapping her feet and flapping her arms, so that before long the flour and water was quite thoroughly mixed together and became a gloopy, gooey white dough. This done, the frog, who by now was covered in the stuff, jumped from the bowl, tipped the bowl up into a baking tin, and pushed the baking tin into the oven to bake. And when the two daughters-in-law saw this, they thought, aha, so that's how it's done. And they ran back to their mansions, and there they filled their bathtubs full of water. They threw sacks of flour into the water, and then they jumped into the bath and started wriggling their legs and wriggling their arms and flapping around until all the flour and water was quite thoroughly mixed together and was a gloopy, gooey white dough. They then scooped this up into bread tins and pushed the bread tins into the oven to bake. Meanwhile, back at Ivan's house, the little green frog hopped off the kitchen counter onto the kitchen floor, and there she peeled off her frog skin. And when that little green skin lay on the ground, beside it there stood a princess so radiant that the whole kitchen was illuminated with her radiance. And she went outside, and she called and she whistled and she shouted and she stamped, and from all over the forest her servants came running. And they said, Mistress, mistress, what do you require of us? And she said, I want a loaf of bread. I want a loaf of bread finer than the king has ever tasted in his life. Go, it must be ready by sunrise. And all the servants, they hurried off into the forest. And some gathered wheat, and some gathered rye. Some gathered yeast, and some gathered honey. Some gathered nuts, and some gathered sugar. And all night long, they milled and mixed and kneaded and baked, until by morning, just as the sun was rising, they took from the oven a loaf of bread that was so delicious that the merest sniff of it and you'd want to eat every last crumb. The kitchen was filled with its fragrant smell, and while it was still warm, the frog princess took it and she laid it by the side of Ivan's bed. And then she went back to where her little green frog skin lay. And no sooner had she bent down and touched it than at once the beautiful princess was no more to be seen. And the only living thing in the kitchen was a little green frog sitting on the floor. Well, that morning the king summoned his three sons to him to examine the bread their wives had made. But the first son's wife, she hadn't known how long to bake her bread, and so just to be on the safe side, she'd left it in the oven for 3 hours. And so the loaf of bread that the first son handed to the king was so blackened and so crusted and so hard that even if you had an axe, you'd have a good job making slices out of that bread. If you had a house to build, why, that bread would be fine as one of your bricks. And the king, he took that blackened loaf and he stared at it in disgust. And then he gave a great cry of indignation and he threw the bread at his son's head, and the first son had to duck quick, and the loaf flew over his head and landed on the floor where it cracked several of the marble tiles. And then the king turned to his second son. Well, the second son, his wife hadn't known how long to bake the bread for either, and so not wanting to overdo it, she'd left it in the oven for just 20 minutes. And so the loaf of bread that the second son handed to the king was at least properly done on the outside, but inside it was nothing but gloopy, uncooked flour and water, which, as the king examined the loaf, began to ooze from a crack in its base all over the king's lap. And the king gave a great cry and he hurled the bread to the ground in disgust, where it splattered like a fried egg. And then the king turned to his third son. And the two brothers, they looked at each other as if to say, well, our bread may not have been much to shout about, but Ivan won't even have a loaf of bread, because as everybody knows, little green frogs don't make bread. And so when Ivan drew out that wonderful loaf of bread, and its delicious smell filled the entire room, the king took the loaf in both hands, and for a long time he lingered over it, savouring its delectable aroma. And then he declared, with a beaming face, that just from smelling it, he knew that this loaf of bread would taste finer than any loaf he'd ever tasted in his life. And the two brothers, they looked at each other, as if to say, how does a frog make a loaf of bread like that? But Ivan couldn't tell them, and that was that. Well, a few days passed, and then the king sent word to his three sons that he would like to see how well his daughters-in-law could dance. Each of his sons should bring their wives to a grand ball so that the king could see how well they danced together. And when Ivan heard this, he wandered back forlornly to his little cottage on the edge of the forest. He sat down at his kitchen table, and he looked at the little green frog sitting in the middle of it, and he sighed. And the little green frog, she looked up at Ivan, and she blinked, and she said, Ivan? You're weeping. What's wrong? What's wrong? Said Ivan. What's wrong? My father has said that you and I must go to a ball tonight so that he can see how well we dance together. How am I supposed to dance with you? You're a frog. I'll probably step on you and kill you. And the little green frog, she hopped a little closer to Ivan, and she said, Ivan, listen carefully. Tonight you must go to the ball alone. But when the rain begins to fall, you will know that your wife is washing in rainwater. When the lightning flashes, you will know that your wife is dressing in her finest clothes. And when the thunder rolls, you will know that your wife is about to arrive. And that's what the frog said. And so, that evening, Ivan, he went to the ball alone. And when he arrived there, he found the king's great hall thronging with people. dukes and duchesses and ladies and lords had come from all over the kingdom, and there in the middle of the hall, surrounded by admirers, were his two elder brothers. The first son in his smartest military uniform, and on his arm there was the princess trying to look as dazzling as possible. And there was the second son, also in his smartest military uniform, and on his arm there was the duke's daughter doing her utmost to look even more dazzling than the princess. And so when Ivan approached, the two brothers, who were by now quite fed up with him, they said, "Hey, it's our little brother Ivan. Hey, Ivan, where's that little wife of yours? Where's that little frog you live with? We're looking forward to seeing you dance with a frog, Ivan. Where is she? Is she in your pocket? Is she down the back of your socks?" But Ivan, he paid them no heed. He merely noticed that outside the rain was beginning to beat against the windows of the hall. And he said, my wife is washing in rainwater." And the two brothers, they looked at each other as if to say, "What on earth's he talking about?" But just then the lightning flashed outside, and for a brief second the hall was illuminated. And Ivan said, "And now, my wife, she is dressing in her finest clothes." The two brothers, they looked at each other, and they burst out laughing. What was he talking about? A little frog dressing in little clothes? Well, Ivan had always been a bit funny, but now he'd obviously cracked. But just then there was a great rumble of thunder in the sky, and outside the king's great hall there was a clatter of horses' hooves, there was a rumbling of carriage wheels, and all the guests rushed to the windows to see and gasp, as drawn by 8 white horses, there arrived outside the great hall the most magnificent golden carriage that anybody there had ever seen, and out of it there stepped a princess as radiant as the sun itself. And as she walked up the steps, all the guests made way for her, and she walked straight into the middle of the hall, and she took Ivan by the hand, and she led him to the royal table. Well, the two brothers and their wives, they followed in astonishment, and the king clapped his hands together and gave orders for the servants to bring in the food. All the guests took their places at tables around the edges of the hall, and the banquet began. But throughout all the feasting, the two daughters-in-law, they couldn't take their eyes off the frog princess. Everything that she did, they did too. The strange thing was, though, that with every mouthful of food that the frog princess took, she would leave a tiny morsel on her fork, and with a delicate flick of her wrist, and so quickly that no one else noticed, she would pop that little morsel down one of her sleeves. And when the two daughters-in-law saw this, they sought to do the same, and with every mouthful of food they would leave a little glob of it on their forks, and with a rather less than delicate flick of their wrists they would pop it down one of their sleeves. And they also noticed that every time the frog princess drank wine, she would ever so delicately spit a little drop down her other sleeve. And when they saw this, they sought to copy her, and with every mouthful of wine they took, they would swill a little round their mouths, and rather less than delicately, they would spit it down the other of their sleeves. And so by the end of the meal, the two daughters-in-law, they were sitting there, with their sleeves bulging with food and wine. And so when the king turned to the first son, and said that now he should take his wife into the middle of the hall so that he could see how they danced together, the princess said that, oh no, she couldn't possibly dance so soon after such a large meal, but perhaps the second son and his wife would dance. But the duke's daughter protested that she too needed a little time to digest, but perhaps Ivan and his wife would dance. Well, Ivan was agreeable, and so he led the frog princess out into the middle of the hall. The musicians began to play, and they began to dance. And she danced so beautifully. All the guests put their head on one side, and they whispered to one another that they'd never seen such dancing. And then all of a sudden, the frog princess, she threw out one of her arms, and out of the sleeve came all the tiny morsels of food, which when they hit the ground, became trees, became bushes, became flower beds, and became a rolling lawn stretching as far as the eye could see. And it seemed to the guests that they were no longer in the king's hall at all, but they were rather in the most beautiful garden. And when she threw out the other sleeve, all the tiny drops of wine flew out, and when they hit the ground, they became a beautiful golden lake, with ducks and geese and swans swimming upon it, and the sunshine glinting on its surface. And it seemed to all the guests that they had arrived in the Garden of Paradise, and that they'd always been there, and that they always would be there, sitting on the grass, with the soft breeze on their faces, with birdsong in the air, and with Ivan and the Frog Princess dancing like no one has danced before. But at last the Frog Princess, she stopped dancing, and she folded her arms, and all these marvels disappeared, and the guests found themselves once more sitting in the gloom of the king's great hall. And as Ivan and the Frog Princess walked back to the royal table, and the guests came to their senses, they started to roar and clap and stamp their feet in applause. And the king just looked at Ivan, and he smiled. And then he turned to his first son and said that now he should go and dance. And the first son took his wife by the hand, and he led her out into the middle of the hall. The musicians began to play, and they began to dance. Well, she was a princess, so she certainly knew how to dance. And as she whirled around and around, the guests whispered to one another that here too was a fine dancer. And as her confidence grew, she thought she'd try the same trick. And so she threw out one of her arms, and all the morsels of food flew from her sleeve in the faces of all the guests. And the guests began to shout and roar in protest. But she thought they were applauding her, and so she threw out the other sleeve, and all the tiny drops of wine flew everywhere. And there was such an uproar that the king had to tell them both to stop and sit down, for goodness sake. And then he said that the second son should take his wife and dance. But just the same thing happened. As she threw out her arms, food and wine flew everywhere, and there was such an uproar the king had to tell them to stop too. But throughout all this commotion, one person had not been watching the dancing at all. Ivan had been sitting at the royal table, and out of the corner of his eye, he'd been looking at the Frog Princess and thinking to himself, how is it that a little green frog can become a woman so beautiful you can't take your eyes off her? And while all the dancing was going on, Ivan crept away from the royal table. He slipped out of the hall without anybody noticing, and he ran through the dark streets until he came to his little cottage on the edge of the forest. And there he searched high and low until he found what he was looking for. There on the floor by the fire, there was a little green frogskin. And he picked it up and he looked at it for a while. And then without further thought, he scrunched it up in his fist and he threw it into the fire and watched it crackle and burn until there was nothing left of it but a bad smell. This done, he walked back through the dark streets, came to the great hall, and resumed his place at the table, without anybody realizing that he'd been gone. Well, when the ball was over, Ivan and the Frog Princess, they walked back home together. But when they came to their little cottage, the Frog Princess went straight over to the fire and looked down at the floor. Ivan, have you seen my clothing? Your clothing? Said Ivan. You're wearing your clothing, my love, and very beautiful you look too. In fact, no, Ivan. My skin. My frog skin. What have you done with my frog skin? And Ivan said, oh, that little thing? Well, I didn't think you'd need it anymore. You're a woman now, you're no longer a frog, and so I threw it in the fire. And the Frog Princess, her eyes became dark, and she glared at Ivan. She said, Ivan Tsarevich, if you had waited just one more night, I would have been yours. Now you may never see me again. If you wish to find me, seek me beyond the thrice nine lands in the thrice tenth kingdom. I'll be living with the Baba Yaga, the old bone woman. And with that, the Frog Princess slapped the ground, became a cuckoo, and flew out the open window into the dark night. And Ivan, he went straight back to his father's town. He went to the blacksmith's shop and he got the man out of bed, and he wouldn't let him go back to sleep until he'd made for Ivan a pair of iron shoes. And by dawn, when the shoes were ready, Ivan put them on, and without saying goodbye to anybody, he set off walking. He walked for many days. He walked for many weeks. He walked for many months. And only then did Ivan come to the first of the thrice nine kingdoms. And for many years, Ivan walked and walked and walked and walked. And only when Ivan's iron shoes were riddled with holes did he come to the thrice tenth kingdom and arrive at the Baba Yaga's house. He found the house standing, as one does, on chicken legs at the edge of the forest. And he shouted out, as one must, little house, little house, turn around so your back is to the forest and your face is to me. And the little house obeyed him, and it waddled round on its chicken legs. And Ivan walked up the steps and pushed open the door. He found himself in a gloomy, smoky room. And in the corner, sitting by the fire, there was an old woman dressed in rags, with greasy, matted hair, and scarcely a tooth in her head. And she said,
Greetings, Prince Ivan. Do you come here of your own will, or against your will?
And Ivan, he said, I come of my own will, of course. I'm looking for the Frog Princess. Do you know her?
Yes, I know her, said the Baba Yaga. She comes here every day for tea. But I warn you, Prince Ivan, if she sees you, she'll kill you. She hates your guts.
But she once loved me, said Ivan.
And she still does. But her love for you is hidden in a far off place.
Then tell me where that is, said Ivan, and I will find it.
Very well. This side of the ocean. There stands a great oak, and inside that oak, there is a golden box. Inside the golden box, there is a hair, there is a duck, inside the duck, there is an egg, and inside that egg, there is her love.
And as soon as Ivan heard this, he set off at once for the great ocean. But as he was making his way through a large forest, he realized how very hungry he was. And so he took an arrow from his quiver, and he cocked his bow so that he might be ready to shoot anything that might cross his path. And as he passed by a large bush, he saw it tremble. And pushing it to one side, he saw behind it, lying on the ground, there was a mother dog, and she was suckling her three little pups. And Ivan thought, well, one of those pups will be just right for my breakfast. And he took aim, and he was just about to shoot the mother dog, when to his great surprise, she lifted her head, and she said, Ivan, I beg of you, spare the life of my children, and I promise you, you won't regret it. And Ivan was so taken aback that he lowered his bow and he walked on. And by and by he came to a great high tree, at the top of which there was an eagle's nest, in which a mother eagle was feeding her several chicks. And Ivan thought, well, a few of those chicks will be just right for my breakfast. And he took aim and was just about to shoot the nest from the tree, when to his great surprise, the mother eagle, she looked down at him, and she said, Ivan, I beg of you, spare the life of my children, and I promise you, you won't regret it. And Ivan was so surprised that he lowered his bow, and he walked on. Well, by and by he came to the great ocean, and on the beach he found a crab, and he thought, well, if I can crack its shell, then I can eat its meat. And he lifted the crab above his head and was just about to bring it down upon a stone to crack its shell, when to his astonishment, the crab said, Ivan, I beg of you, spare my life, and I promise you won't regret it. And Ivan was so startled that he dropped the crab on the sand and watched it scuttle away into the sea. Well, he walked down the beach until at last he came to that great oak tree that stood at the edge of the sea. He climbed up it, and inside a deep hollow he found a golden box. He lifted the golden box out and he placed it on the sand. Carefully he undid the lock, lifted the latch, but all of a sudden the lid burst open and out of the box there jumped a hare, and the hare just ran down the beach before Ivan could grab it, and Ivan just sat there on the beach watching this hare disappearing in a cloud of sand down the beach. And he thought, oh, what I need now is a dog. And no sooner had he spoken than behind him out of the forest there came barking and yelping the mother dog whose pups he'd spared. She caught up with the hare, grabbed it by the scruff of the neck, and dragged it back and gave it to Ivan. Ivan took the hare and he tore it in half, but the duck inside wriggled out of his grasp and flapped its wings and flew above his head, and Ivan just sat there watching the duck disappearing into the sky. And he put his head in his hands and he said, oh, what I need now is an eagle. And no sooner had he spoken than behind him he heard a mighty thundering of wings, as out of the forest came the eagle whose chicks he'd spared. The eagle caught the duck in mid-flight and brought it down and gave it to Ivan. Ivan took the duck and he tore it in half, and inside there was the egg, but the egg was so slippery and so slimy that it slipped through his fingers and it rolled away down into the sea. But Ivan didn't feel too bad, because he thought that maybe the crab would help him. And sure enough, it wasn't long before the crab came out of the sea with the egg between its claws. Ivan took the egg and he brought it to the Baba Yaga. The Baba Yaga cooked it in a pot, And that afternoon, when the frog princess came round for tea, Ivan he hid under a bundle of rags in the corner. But the moment the frog princess tasted the sweet yellow yolk, she at once burst into tears, and she began to sob and weep and say that once she had a husband, but now she had none. And when Ivan heard this, he threw off the bundle of rags and he stood up in front of her. And when the frog princess saw him standing there, she leapt from the table and she ran over to him and she put her arms around him and she wept. The two of them were reunited and they set off for Ivan's kingdom that very day. And when several years later they arrived, they found the old king on his deathbed. But the old king had no doubt in his mind as to who should inherit his crown. For he wished above all else that his kingdom should be ruled wisely. And he knew that two heads are better than one. And of all his daughters-in-law, there was none so wise and none so wonderful as the frog princess.